Hey, what's up, guys? This is Guillaume Smith for the Smith Vibes Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Today, we get an amazing invite, who is Jordan Syatt. I'm so stoked that Jordan has agreed to get on the podcast today. And I wanted to have Jordan for a while now because Jordan is everything that you can aspire to be as a personal trainer, as an online training coach, as a strength and conditioning specialist, name it. He's one of those coaches out there who puts everything on the table. He's raw. He tells the truth. He's super positive about it. There's no bias in what he says. He really, really explains well and vulgarizes everything you need to know about training. He helps thousands and thousands of people. He's also been Gary Vaynerchuk's coach. He's been to the best gyms in the world, like Westside Barbell, Cressy Sport Performance. We get a lot more into that during the podcast. Stay tuned for the whole thing. Once again, thanks a lot, Jordan, and thanks for tuning in. Just as a special mention today, because this podcast was done online, we didn't have the opportunity to test one of our sponsors. So the sponsor for today's podcast is DAC Coffee Roasters. DAC Coffee Roasters are actually two Montrealers that I got to know online once again. These guys roast in Amsterdam, and they were kind enough to send me many bags to try them out. And the KO Valle Puran from Peru was one of my favorites of what they sent me. But their coffee was all great. Just to give a nice shout out there. So thanks a lot, guys, for tuning in. And here we go with Jordan.
Oh, yeah, I got you. Perfect.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Well, I'm doing really good. Fine, thank you. How are you?
Doing well, man. Doing well. Having some coffee. Pretty relaxing day. Nothing too crazy.
Cheers, man.
There we go. Cheers, bro. Where are you based out of?
Montreal.
Nice. Very nice. I've been to Montreal once or twice. Forget which one, but I like it. I like it a lot. It's a really nice place.
Yeah, it's good for coffee. We have so many roasters over there.
Yeah. And do you speak French?
Yes, it's my first language, actually.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, but I'm born down in Toronto, so I learned English at the same time, so it was great.
Oh, did you really? Got it.
Yeah. Mom's nice, French, man. Dad's English.
Got it. So, and your accent is very, like, normal. Like, it's, you don't have much of a French accent, so that's amazing, man. It's one of the worst things about living in America is learning a second language is not normalized. So, but I love that, man. That's great.
The thing is, it's weird because when I do podcasts, I'd rather do them in English. For some reason, it's just so much easier to, like, kind of have the sense of, like, some expressions. In French, it's a little different.
That makes sense. It's so I speak Hebrew. I learned Hebrew in my like early 20s. I lived in Israel for a number of years, and it was one of the cool things about learning another language is realizing that you can express yourself very differently. And so, for example, in Hebrew, they have far fewer words to express yourself, whereas in English, there are so many ways to express an emotion or how you're feeling. I've heard, and I don't know if this is correct because I don't speak German, I've heard they're arguably the most expressive. They have so many different words for so many different emotions or feelings or things. Like a really good example is Schadenfreude. Like they have that one word just to describe like the emotion of Schadenfreude, which now we use in English as though it's an English word, but languages interest me a lot. So that's super cool, man.
Yeah. And just like the emotion that they create, like you can see Italians and Spanish people and they're just like, so like into it and you kind of know if they're mad or not.
Yeah. So true. So true.
Well, yeah. So I just want to dive in right into it. And first of all, just thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's an honor to have you, actually. I mean, I really, really appreciate what you represent for fitness. Like, I don't know if you've been told this often, but like, I feel that you're very, very genuine and authentic in the way that you represent your content. So I really appreciate that.
I appreciate that a lot, man. Thank you. That means a lot to me.
So like, I mean, you've been along here for a long time. And I mean, how do you actually, like, I feel that the content that you share is like making a difference. And is it what you want for like the future of fitness? How do you see that?
What do you mean?
Through the content that you share, the way that you share it, you vulgarize it very well. I think that people really relate to it. Do you think that's the future of fitness, that and where it's going?
In terms of the style of content that I use?
Exactly.
That's a good question. No one's ever asked me that. I would say that looking at the trend of different styles of content, I've noticed more people using off the style of content that I use. So yes, I would say that's definitely shifting the direction. And I think really what my content really boils down to, excuse me, is just telling the truth. That's really it. And it's a science-based approach of telling the truth, but also in a way that makes it really easy for people to understand. For me, growing up in the industry, number one, science-based information was very hard to come by. There was a lot of misinformation, a lot of pseudoscience, and there still is, but it's much easier now to find science-based information than it was in the early 2000s. As it's progressed, now it's become easier to get science-based information, but I still think coaches are struggling to express that scientific information in an easy to understand, digestible way. And that's really what I think I have a huge advantage with. And I think a lot of that stems from, I grew up in special needs. Like, I was not a smart student. I took special needs courses. I got extra time in class. Like, I was never a good student, and I never have been and never will be a good student, especially in the classically taught school system. And I think I had to learn how to complex information that other kids were really good at sort of just picking up easily. And I had to figure out, okay, well, how do I take this and break it down in a way for me to understand it and really internalize it? And I think that's what's allowed me to teach science in a more easily digestible way.
I 100% agree. I relate to that learning process. And the question actually came from these past days with the coronavirus and all that stuff. I feel that a lot of people like totally changed their way of sharing content, but you haven't.
Yeah, I very much agree with that.
So you kind of like realize who is actually being a fraud or not. And people, it's kind of like they get exposed.
It's a great point. It's a very astute observation, one that candidly, I didn't even make that observation until you just said it. But seriously, I never was like, oh, wow, like there's so many people changing. But now that I think about it, you're right. You're 100% correct. So yeah, it is. And you could also use it in the scenario of, there are a lot, one of the most common questions I get from coaches is, do you think the industry is too saturated in order to either make an impact or to actually grow a business? And I've always said no, because the number of coaches who are actually willing to work very, very, very hard in order to grow their brand and their business and reach more people, it's not that many. There are a lot of coaches. There are not a lot of phenomenal coaches willing to put in a lot of work in order to really reach more people. And you've seen that now so many coaches have dropped off. So like many have changed their style of content and many have just abandoned it altogether. They're just like, well, I'm not going to do this anymore. And it just shows you, like, again, as long as you're willing to put in the time and the effort and the patience and the dedication to this, then it will work for you. It's not oversaturated. It's just, there's a lot on the surface level. There are very few when you go deeper.
When you look at it, like, I don't know how many billion people that live on planet Earth, and like, there's definitely not that many people training if you can compare it to that in percentage.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's 100% correct.
And I mean, like, even like, I see a lot of people that weren't online and now they don't have a choice to be online. So you're seeing their kind of content is kind of starting to pop out, but you kind of realize, oh shit, well, that's like what I've been doing maybe 3 years ago when I started or something like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or like, you know, copying.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's actually really interesting. I mean, so many people across so many different industries have been devastatingly hit. And I wouldn't wish that on any, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. I would never wish somebody's business to be swept out from underneath them and put in a bad situation ever. it's interesting to see how, I mean, I remember when I first started going online in 2011, 2012, 2013, I got a lot of flack for it. And in different phases of my career, as when I started going online just on my website and then on Instagram and all these other things, I got a lot of flack from coaches being like, you can't coach online. Online coaching doesn't work. It's not good. That all these things. And now everyone is online. Like most people were online before this. Now everybody is online or they're not doing anything at all. And I think it just goes to show you it's anything is possible. If you want to make it work, you can make it work. And I, it's sort of like if a client came to me and said, hey, I only have 15 minutes to work out, I would never say, well, don't do it ever. In the same way, if someone said like, yeah, listen, I can only fill my gas tank up a quarter of the way, like, and they were all out of gas, I wouldn't say, well, just don't fill it. Just stay where you are. Like, of course, fill up what you can, go as far as you can, then we'll reassess. I think a lot of coaches are like, well, in-person coaching is the only way because it's the best way. When the reality is online, you can reach so many more people. You can help so many more people. Even if you're not there with them in person, there are so many other ways to help people other than just watching every single rep.
I really like that example about the gas tank. I mean, I think that people understand it so well.
It's true. I mean, if you had zero gas in your tank and you only had enough change in your pocket to fill up a quarter of a tank, you wouldn't just be like, oh, well, might as well just stay here. You'd be like, no, I'm going to fill this up a quarter tank and then get as far as I can and reassess. The working out is the same way. If you don't have a full hour, do 15 minutes. It's might not be as optimal as having a full tank of gas, but at least you're going to go somewhere. At least it's going to keep you in the habit. At least you're going to improve something. Even if it's only mobility, tissue quality, do a little bit of core strength. At least you're doing something.
It's funny that you said that you got a lot of flack in 2011, because I feel that like even in 2019, there was people giving flack to some people starting online and doing personal training, right? But like, how did them, like, what was the main reason for you to want to go online?
That's a great question, man. So I started coaching in 2000 when I was 14 years old, when I was in high school. So I got my first coaching job when I was 14 because I was a wrestler and I was cutting a lot of weight. I made varsity as a freshman. I was cutting from 112 to 103 pounds every week. And I needed to get stronger because I was going up against juniors and seniors. So I applied to a gym near me in a town, couple towns over. And I was like, listen, I'll take the trash out. I'll clean the floors. Just let me come here and I'll work for free. I just want to learn strength and conditioning. And they were super generous and they were very nice. They took me under their wing and they introduced me to very high level strength and conditioning at 14 years old. And I worked there all through high school. And I was very lucky because I didn't waste much time with a lot of the pseudoscience nonsense, a lot of the bodybuilding magazines. Like, I got pushed right into very science-based strength and conditioning very early. So I coached from 14 years old to 24 years old. I coached for a decade in person before, like right around when many people start their career, I'd already been coaching for a decade. I already had 10,000 hours, probably multiple 10,000 hours under my belt. And one thing that so what happened was when I got to college, I was competitively powerlifting and I had some really amazing opportunities and I was doing well as a competitive powerlifter. And I made a website not to make a business. And this is the most important part for me to clarify. In 2011, in July of 2011, I made my website when I was competitively powerlifting and training at Westside Barbell. And I made the website purely to show people what I was doing as a powerlifter, what I was doing lifting-wise, nutrition-wise. A lot of my mentors in the industry had websites and it was blogs. Like, that's what people did. So I was like, oh, I'll do that. Like, I'll just write down what I'm doing. And I didn't know an online business was possible. I didn't know PayPal.com existed. I was like, this is just what the best in the industry do, so I will do it too. And eventually, after a long time, people were reading my stuff and they're like, could you write my programs? And again, I didn't know you could get paid for it online. So I was like, yeah, I'll do it for free. I'll like write your programs, like absolutely. And I was doing that. And I had enough people asking me like that it was making up a dramatic portion of my day in college, writing programs for people I've never met. And then one day, a woman from Brazil emailed me and she was like, how much do you charge for online coaching? And I had never been asked that before. And I was like, $300. And she was like, cool. How do I pay you? And I was like, that's a really good question. I don't know. So I had to look up how to get paid online. And I found PayPal and I made an account and she transferred $300 to me. And I remember I spent 3 hours designing her program alone, which is a long time to design one person's program. Number one, like I was not as experienced as I am now, but more importantly, I couldn't believe someone that I had never met just paid me $300. And I was like, I got to make this the best program ever made.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. And so I spent 3 hours on the program and I sent, and I was so nervous. I was, cause I had to make everything from scratch, like all the systems, everything. I wanted to make it look nice with my logo and all the stuff. And I was concerned that when I sent it to her, she was going to be like, really? Like, I want my money back. And she got it and she was like, this looks amazing. Super happy about it. And that was the first time I ever thought about the possibility of something online. And I made a lot of mistakes and a lot of mistakes and a lot of mistakes. And, but the more I did it, the more I realized like, not only is this a viable business, but it's a business that actually helps people. I mean, otherwise, without making content, and I never would have worked with that woman, and I never would have worked with thousands upon thousands of people as a result of that. And so many of them have been able to improve their lives as a result of it. And I think a lot of the dogmatic in-person crowd tends to think, well, in-person is inherently better. But the way I think about it, it's like, there are some people who need in-person. There are definitely some people who thrive on it. There are other people who maybe they don't have the time to do in-person. They don't have the money to do in-person. They don't enjoy in-person for a number of reasons. So are all of those people just, they should just not get any coaching whatsoever? It's like, no, there's so many options. And that's what's great about the internet. Like, you can find whatever you want. And there's so many opportunities to help people through it.
And do you still do like in-person? Or like, do you miss that part of your life?
So I did coach a guy named Gary Vaynerchuk for 3 years. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's a big entrepreneur. Yeah, yeah. So I coached Gary for 3 years in person.
Don't you still train him?
No. So I actually stopped that. I actually stopped. Okay. My buddy Mike took over recently. Okay. And so I coached him for 3 years and I was literally just texting him the other day. Like, we're on really good terms. But 7 days a week, 3 years straight. If he was in Hong Kong, I was in Hong Kong. If he was in LA, I was in LA. If he was in Germany, I was in Germany. Traveled all over the world with him. I got burned out. I was like, all right, enough is enough.
You're just going to train one person.
Just him. So he was the only in-person client I had. Everything else was online. Before I coached Gary, I was living in Israel for several years and I had some in-person clients where the majority of my business was online. I coached my Hebrew teacher. He was actually my first in-person client in Israel. Right now, in this moment, obviously not coaching anyone in person because of coronavirus. Yeah. Occasionally people will either travel or I'm based out of New York. So people will be like, hey, could I get a one-off session with you or a couple sessions with you? Based on my travel schedule right now, I don't do one-on-one coaching, but I'm planning on leaving New York City within the next year to 3 years, getting a home, settling down a little bit. And I would love to have just a couple people that I train consistently in person because I love doing that.
Yeah. People you enjoy kind of, and just like,
yeah. I won't even charge them. Just like one of my dreams that I've wanted for a long time was just to have they call it a key, like a key gym, like basically where you just give everyone a key. Like, really? Give everyone a key. And it's like, I don't want to charge people for it. Like, I'll have a super stock gym. And for me, I lived in Israel for a while. And when you're 18 years old, you have to go to the military in Israel. And I've always like, I wanted to get a house in Israel and I wanted to open up a gym in my garage, have a nice gym and let all the local kids come for free in preparation for the army. And that was my dream for a while. And I'd still like to do that. I don't know how realistic it is at this point. But I would love to have just a gym that whatever local community I'm in, people can come for free and just all have a key. And so like, it's a lot of trust. You're sort of trusting that people aren't going to steal stuff or leave stuff a mess, but that's what I would love to have eventually, just like a great community and a great place for young kids to come, and adults to come and get good coaching, have good equipment, good access without having to pay for it.
It's funny that you said that you got like burnt out of personal training, because some people will think that you'll be more burnt out by doing online, by being on the computer all the time. But actually being in relation with a client is often very, very, very demanding mentally. It could affect your mental health in many ways, obviously.
Especially if you're like an empath and you take on the emotions of the people you're working with. And this was one of the things I really struggled with a lot when I first started coaching. Because when you're coaching people, they're talking to you. They're telling you what they're struggling with. And I think a lot of people get into coaching because they want to help people. And so when you're working with people who are going through very difficult things and they're expressing it to you and they're sad or depressed or lonely, whatever it is, you want to make them feel better. And oftentimes you take on their emotions and it can be very draining and very difficult. And I've always said, like, if I have coaches that work for me in person, I would put a cap on how many clients they could see in a day, probably no more than 4 per day and no more than 2 hours in a row. Just because any more than that, you can't give your best as a coach. You can't. If you're seeing people 3 hours in a row or 6, 7, 8 clients in a day, which I did, like, it's brutal. And you have like a cup of empathy. You start off with your day, your empathy cup is full. By the end of the day, it's drained. And there's only so much that you have. So like generally I found after 4 clients, you have no more. And if you do that for, it's why most coaches, they burn out after a year of coaching because they can't do it anymore. Waking up early, going to bed late, split shifts, so much work with one-on-one clients. It's very difficult.
I kind of tried this strategy before everything happened. And it was like only doing the personal trainings on like, I did like 2 or 3 days a week. And the rest of the week was like either creating content or like doing the online stuff. And I felt that was like so balanced. And I was just like, whoa, am I okay here? Am I like on the right path or
yeah,
just from like burnt out by all the rest?
100% with you.
Yeah. So like, you're not training Gary anymore, but what was the breaking point that made you decide that, okay, I'm done with this. I just really want to focus on the online stuff. And
So Mike and I, Gary's current coach, Mike Vacanti, one of my best friends in the world, we were originally going to go on, 3 months off. And that was right when I ended my 3 years in a row. So Mike had coached Gary for 2 years straight. Then I coached Gary for 3 years straight. And then Mike wanted to get back in the mix. And so we were like, all right, we'll go back and forth, 3 months on, 3 months off. When my 3 months started again, that was June, July, August. So in September, my 3 months started and we went through that. And around mid, late October, I was just burned out because what happened was once I stopped coaching Gary and had 3 months off, I created a new schedule, a new habit, new routine. I could be much more productive. I wasn't traveling. I could do jujitsu again. That was actually, if I really think about it, jujitsu is really the thing that was it. Because when I was coaching Gary, I had no schedule. I was on Gary's schedule, which is crazy. It's last minute. Travel is booked oftentimes the day before, day of. Trips are canceled, workouts are canceled, or whatever it is. Or like, you have to be here right now, go to this dinner. It's just constant. He is your main focus all the time. And because of that, I had no consistent gym schedule. I wanted to do jujitsu, but like their classes are at set times. And like, I just couldn't guarantee I'd make it. So once I stopped coaching Gary, I started going to jujitsu several times a week at 7 in the morning, right around our time that we would work out. And I was like, I don't want to miss jujitsu anymore. Like, I love this. Like, I love doing jujitsu. This has made my life better. It's made me a better man, made me a better person. And I don't want to give this up. And so we had that conversation and couldn't have been happier and separated very, very well. I mean, I went to his house not too long ago. We watched the Wilder Fury boxing match together. So like really on very good terms, and he's an incredible guy. And I can only say, the most amazing things about him because he treated me very well.
And how, like, so you couldn't actually really train right after you trained him or like before you trained him? He was just like, you had to leave at the same time.
Well, so coaching Gary is somewhere between 6 in the morning to 7:30 in the morning, somewhere in that range. Even if it's in the calendar for 6 or 6:30 or 7, I might get there. And I mean, you got to remember, he might have not went to bed until 2 or 3. So he might text me and he'll be like, hey, I'm going to push another hour. And so now I have to wait. And I have to wait for Gary to start whenever he wants, because that's what Gary's paying for, someone to basically be his sole coach.
Yeah,
that's part of the job description. That's what he takes care of. He's like, I don't want you to have to worry about anything else, just me. And that's what you sign on for. And so it wasn't unfair at all. It was very fair. It was very clear. That's what was laid out. But it was very worth it. But after a certain point, there's diminishing returns, especially when I want to have other focuses in my life. And my business, it grew a lot from it. I grew mentally and emotionally from it. I learned a tremendous amount. My physical health went down to the drain. Just like nutrition habits went to shit, training went to shit. And once I started to get back on track with that, when I stopped, I wasn't willing to give that up.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that, and I think that it's, well, it's obviously it's unfortunate that you couldn't be able to keep that fitness and everything, but I find it really cool to see more and more entrepreneurs and even like actors, like you see Kevin Hart always training with his coach.
Oh, he's so strong. Yeah.
And like,
he's strong.
I find it amazing to see like these guys like really like understanding like that it's important, but they're also sharing to the people that, hey guys, I'm doing this over here. You guys should all do that.
100%. Kevin Hart, The Rock, and Mark Wahlberg, all three are like three of the guys who I see consistently who not only do it, but show people they go out of their way to make it a priority. Like, and obviously The Rock has more money than I can even comprehend. He literally has a gym travel with him wherever he goes, a fully stacked gym wherever he goes. And then he's up at 4 a.m. getting it done, or he's in there at midnight. He's like, listen, I had a crazy day. I got to get it in. He's not just glamorizing it and making it seem like this is easy or I can do it whenever I want. He's like, listen, you just had a full day of work, and now he has to get in at midnight. And it's not what he's saying you should do, but he's being very honest and saying, if you prioritize it, you'll make it happen.
When you said that you started jiu-jitsu, it seems that, I don't know why, like it seems like so many coaches of like a certain age are all starting jiu-jitsu at the same time. Why is that? Like, even I'm thinking about it.
You should. You absolutely should. It's very interesting. So I wrestled from 8 years old to 18 years old, and wrestling and jiu-jitsu are both grappling sports. And basically what that means is like you roll on the ground, you wrestle. There's no striking, there's no kicking, there's no punching, there's no elbows, there's no knees, there's no headbutting, none of that stuff. It's all wrestling. The difference between wrestling and jiu-jitsu is jiu-jitsu has a submission component to it. So wrestling, I would say, is the sport of control. You want to control your opponent. Jiu-jitsu is the sport of control leading to submission. So you control them, then you get to the point in which you can apply some type of a move that might break their arm, might break their wrist, choke them out, break their leg, their knee, ankle, whatever. And ideally they tap out before they actually break the bone or the joint. So for me, it was a very natural progression to jiu-jitsu. And I dabbled with it in high school, dabbled with it a little bit when I retired from powerlifting. And I've always wanted to get back into it. I've seen a huge jump to it. And I think it's very clearly a large result of mixed martial arts becoming more popular. UFC and signing on with ESPN and ESPN broadcasting that. Now mixed martial arts has become very mainstream. I remember in high school, I mean, the UFC started in the 1990s and no one knew about it. It was like next to nothing. And it's been going since the early 1990s. And it's only just started to really become mainstream. And I think what a lot of people are seeing is what people saw in the early UFC days when Hoist Gracie, comes from the family of the people who created jiu-jitsu. Hoist Gracie came in to mixed martial arts. He was a very small guy, very skinny guy. Going up against, they didn't have weight classes. They're just one. It was like, you go in, you just fight. And it was nothing on your hands, just full on fight. And he went in against dudes who were double his size. And you thought like, oh my God, this guy's going to get torn apart. And these videos are all online. You can go look them up. It completely changed the fight game forever. And what would happen is like, he would get hit at first. Like he'd get a little battered around, but nothing devastating. He was very good at defending himself. And when it went to the ground, he would submit guys who were double, 2.5 times his size. He'd choke them out. He'd break their arms, break their shoulders, break their legs. And like no one knew what was going on. And so all of a sudden, most fighters, number one at that time, boxing was and still is huge, but people thought of fighting as hand to hand, like you hit people, you punch people. Kickboxing never really took off for whatever reason. Boxing always did. But people thought it was just like a punching and kicking and striking. Hoist Gracie and the Gracie family made jiu-jitsu mainstream. They made it cool. They were like, listen, if you look at most fights, if you watch videos of street fights, most of them go to the ground. You had two people, they end up on the ground. If you fight on the ground, then you have a massive disadvantage. So I think with mixed martial arts and the UFC specifically signing on with ESPN and being mainstream, people have been like, wow, like what is this fighting on the triangle choke? What is an arm bar? All these things. And now I think it's becoming the new deadlift. And I say that because I remember in the early to mid 2000s, if you went to a commercial gym, you rarely saw anyone deadlifting. You saw a lot of people on machines. You saw a lot of people doing like bodybuilding stuff, but very rarely did you see people deadlifting or doing farmer's walks or squats, especially not with good form. Now you go into a commercial gym, you see it all the time. You see people deadlifting and squatting and doing farmer's walks and planks, and it's amazing, just mainstream people. And now I see that becoming jujitsu. So many people are like, oh, like it's good to learn how to defend yourself. It's good to have something like to have discipline. It's good to have something like this that's difficult in your life. And I see jujitsu becoming more and more mainstream because people want to learn how to defend themselves and learn how to defend themselves in a safe way.
I feel that like by doing a sport like jujitsu, you're kind of like getting out of your own gym. So out of like your field of expertise and just mm-hmm. being coached by somebody else into something that you don't know as much. And like that kind of like helps you as a coach. So like when you go back to your coaching.
Great point. I suck at jujitsu. One of the things I love about it too is it's based on a belt system, right? So you have white belt, blue belt, purple belt, brown belt, black belt. Usually it will take you at least 10 years to get your black belt. There are some phenoms and some crazy individuals 3 to 5 times a week at least to get your black belt. It's an insane amount of time and consistency and effort and injuries and everything to overcome. But I love how you walk in and I have a white belt wrapped around my waist and everyone knows that I suck. Everybody knows that I suck. And I love going into a gym and being able to watch the other coaches and just like, you tell me what to do because I suck. Like, you're the boss. You're the expert. I know nothing. I'm going to shut up and do what you say. And every time I go, every single time I go into jiu-jitsu, every single time I go into the gym, I'm nervous. I'm scared. I know for a fact I'm going to get hurt. Like, I know for a fact I'm going to get beat. I know it. I know I'm going to get choked out. And my coach said something very powerful to me when I first started. He said, when you start your day trying to prevent someone from choking you, all the rest of the problems you have throughout the day become relatively insignificant. And it's very true. When you start your day trying to fight for your life, everything else is relatively insignificant.
That's amazing. That's true. Fuck.
If that doesn't make you want to do jujitsu, I don't know what will.
I will. Well, maybe not with the 2 meter distance right away, but in a couple months. Of course. If we back off a little bit, like in your earlier days when you, I'm curious. I'm a big fanatic of doing smart work over hard work. Mm-hmm. When you were at Westside Barbell, was it more about hard work or smart work?
So you ask some really amazing questions, man. I go on many podcasts. Very few ask such insightful questions. I think it was a good mix of both. Number one is Louis Simmons, the owner of Westside, is one of the smartest individuals I've ever met. Very few people know more about strength and conditioning than him. And a lot of people don't know it, but he actually brought the Soviet secrets, the Russian secrets to the United States. He was the one who had a lot of the books translated. And he's the reason why the US and so much of the Soviet secrets have become mainstream now because of him. His entire system is based on very scientific, evidence-based principles, and he required me to study them. A part of being there was I was required to take his certification, which he gave me for free every single day. I trained 11 times a week with him. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, we had 2-a-days. Then Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, we had a single session. So it was 11 times a week. It was an outrageous amount of hard work. It was very difficult, but it was all science-based. It was very deliberate. There were a lot of times when I'll say like, I'd be like, I could do more. He'd be like, stop, no reason to kill yourself. I'll never forget Louis talking very clearly about how make fun of CrossFit a lot and saying, and these are Louis' words, not mine, but he'd be like, so many CrossFit gyms brag about making their clients throw up from working out. And he'd always be like, throwing up is your body rejecting what's going on. It is a sign that your body doesn't want to have what's happening happen to it. He's like, working out until you throw up is stupid. You don't want to work out to make yourself weaker. You want to work out to make yourself stronger. And so Louis is I think one of the best at applying science-based principles and working very intelligently while also pushing you to your absolute limit. Like really, that was the most brutally intense training I've ever done in my entire life. It really pushed me in. And realistically, I don't think I could have kept it up for very long, because I think eventually my joints and my tendons and my ligaments, I don't think it would have been able to keep up. So from a long-term perspective, I think it would have been too much. But for that time frame, which is a three and a half month time frame, the maximum amount of effort and hard work and the maximum amount of science-based strength training, intelligent strength training combined, my total went up by 300 pounds in those three and a half months. It was insane.
Yeah, because often you'll see some videos of him, and a lot of people will maybe think that it's very well. Obviously, it is science based, but like, I'll see that. Oh well, if you go there, you're only gonna work hard and max out all the time, and like that's what they see, right? But yeah. But behind it, I was actually really curious of knowing like somebody that's been there, like how smart and around that hard work is.
I think. I'm glad you asked, because it's important for me to spread the truth about it. It's funny, when I was at Westside, all the lifters there were trying to get me to drop out of school. They're like, just drop out. It's a waste. Stay here and lift. And I was very close to doing it. Louis was the only one who said, go back. And he made it really clear. He was like, the reason I brought you here is because he's like, look at me. He's like, I'm tattooed head to toe. I've been to prison. He's like, I don't have a college degree. He's like, schools won't have me come in and speak to them because like I'm not what they want. I'm not the image they like. He's like, I want you to go back. I want you to teach people the right way to lift. I want you to teach people the right way to train. He's like, so you're going to go back. The way that I look at sort of people looking at Westside and thinking, oh, they just max out all the time. They train stupidly. It's sort of like when you look at an influencer, if you want to call them that, on Instagram, and you see them at the beach or by the pool, and you're like, oh, all day they're just at the pool. It's like, no. They specifically staged that photo to make it seem like that's what they do. And they have a ton of those pictures to make it seem like that's what they're doing all the time. They're not happy all the time. They're not at the pool all the time. They're not in a great mood all the time. Like oftentimes they don't have a lot of money. They're pretending to be that. And so you only see what they allow you to see. Westside, a lot of what they show you is their max outs and their heavy lifts. They talk about that because it's realistically, it is good marketing. Like the people are very interested in it. You don't hear about that very much. But when you really dig into the system, it's only a very small part of the larger whole.
I think I watched their movie like two times in a row. Like one day and then the day after, I was just like, oh, let's watch this again.
Did you like it?
I really enjoyed it. I found it like obviously raw, but what I enjoyed about it was how authentic it was.
I haven't watched it yet. I didn't watch it because it's very hard to explain this. I literally just got chills. I don't know how they portray Louis in it. And Louis treated me like a son. And like I was a 21-year-old kid in a very bad place in my life, like school. I almost dropped out of school and joined the Israeli army. And the only reason I didn't is because Louis invited me to Westside. He let me come there for free. He took me to breakfast and lunch every single day, paid for every single meal. He gave me his certification for free every day, 4 days a week. He would let me ask him question on question on question on question to learn from him. He gave me so many hours of his time. I am forever indebted to him, and I will be loyal to him until the day I die. And I clearly don't think anyone, myself included, does everything right. Ever. I think everyone makes mistakes. Everyone does bad things. Everyone has their pros and cons. But he did so much for me that I bad light. So, and I don't know how that movie portrayed him. I hope they portrayed him well. I'm down or say he's stupid or whatever it is, just because he did so much.
Yeah. Well, I think they did pretty good, but I mean, I feel what you mean. And it's like that's what I hear a lot about that place, that like he actually pays and gives everything all the time. Like you don't actually pay right to get there, and like it's correct. It's a bit like your dream
key gym, right? It's like
it's exactly right.
I feel that you've been inspired by that a bit, eh?
That's exactly right. Yeah. And it's not a mistake that's what Mark Bell's gym is.
Yeah.
Bell has Super Training's a free gym. You can walk in and work out. Like,
but where do they make money actually? Oh, from all the equipment.
The products and the equipment and all that. But it's not a mistake that Mark Bell has a gym that anyone can go work out at. It's not a mistake that that's what I want. It's because Louis was such a role model for us, such like a love of the iron and love of the sport and lifting and people. That's like, you can't help but want to do that for others. I admire Mark Bell. I'm great friends with Mark Bell. I was just out there not too long ago and seeing his facility, seeing Super Training, it's an incredible facility. It's, you can go for free. It's amazing. It's extraordinary.
That's crazy. I might actually get down there and check it out.
You should. You absolutely should.
Well, I have a last question and then I'll go through three final questions that I always ask everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
At the end of the podcast. And I'm curious because it wasn't an initial question I wanted to talk about, but you came up with so many things that I'm curious, like, do you feel that your breaking point into being like, I wouldn't say successful, but like, I don't like the word success because that means so many different things.
Yeah, I agree.
But like, where was your own breaking point? Was it through online coaching or was it through like more personal training?
I would say it all fed each other, right? It all equal parts. So, I recently made a list with my buddy Mike, who coaches Gary, about like the top 10 things that we think every coach needs to do if they want to create an online business. And we made it into a podcast, a two-part podcast, and I don't think we published it yet. But the first five things are basically learning how to be a great coach, studying, coaching. The first thing we said, if you want to be a great online coach, is coach people in person. It's like before you get your website, before you start like posting on social media, coach people in person.
For free,
especially to start. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I very much believe that coaching people in person will make you a better online coach. I don't think coaching people online will make you a better in-person coach. So I think if it wasn't for the foundation of coaching in person and for the blessing of being able to go to a gym as a teenager and learning at such a young age, then I definitely wouldn't be where I am today. I also think that after Westside, I interned at Cressy Sports Performance under Eric Cressy, who is just like another huge mentor of mine and someone I look up to immensely.
I've been there in September.
Oh yeah. That's amazing. Amazing.
I went to their annual seminar.
The one in Massachusetts?
Yes.
Yeah. It's an amazing facility, right?
Crazy.
Yeah. It's incredible. I was actually just texting with Pete Dupuis earlier today. We're talking about getting on a podcast. But Eric, I admired both in person and online. But Eric is the reason that I – or not the reason. Eric is one of the main reasons that I started a website. If you go look at my articles from 2011, 2012, 2013 – you'll see that I was doing an exercise video of the week every week, just like Eric did for years. It was copying him. It was like, oh, Eric's making exercise videos. I'll make exercise videos. Eric's writing articles. I'll write articles. And it was like, I saw how many people he was impacting. I was like, that's what I want to do. So I think learning how to be a great in-person coach was the foundation and I needed it. But I also think online was another foundation that I needed. And like, we sort of think of a pyramid and we think of a foundation and we often think of the foundation as just one long thing, but I think of it as like the pyramids, right? The pyramid, there's multiple blocks of it. So coaching people in person, studying, making online content, whatever it is, like it all was the foundation. And if it was only several of them, the pyramid would be smaller. The bigger your base, the bigger the pyramid. So I think it all really plays into it.
I like where your answer went. I wasn't expecting that. That's awesome. Well, for to finish my the podcast, I have always my three final questions. So my first question is actually the hardest one for everybody, but let's see how fast you can answer to that one. So if you would have, if Jordan would have a theme song, when you come into a room, what's the song that pops in people's ears?
Oh man. I'm so bad with music too. Oh, you know what? The Lion King, Circle of Life, like, Savenya, that one. Awesome. That one. When you're awesome. Like, zap, Lion King.
All right, all right. That's cool. I'll put that in the teaser for the podcast when I'll post it. Just a little lion. My second question is, well, you travel a lot, so you'll probably have an easy answer for that. What would be the country of choice outside of the United States you would have to move to and live there forever?
Israel. Israel, for sure. That's Israel's where my heart is, for sure. I've lived there for years. It's like, I don't even know if I'm going to live in the United States for sure, but Israel's where my heart is. New York is where I like for business. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just the hustle place, like the energy, everything, so many opportunities there. Israel is where my heart belongs. It's where I'm my happiest.
I think it's important. Awesome. And my last question is, if you had one piece of advice to give a 10-year younger of yourself, what would that be?
You know, someone asked me this the other day, and it was so hard, so much I would like to tell myself. I would say one of the more important things that I would tell myself is to be more open-minded. I think one of the things I pride myself on now is how I think I'm very good at seeing both sides, not being very dogmatic, understanding there's a lot of gray area. There's really very rarely just like a this or that. It's like, it's not binary all the time. My younger self was very like, once I thought something was true, like that was it. And I was like, that was it. There was no other option. That's it. Period. End of story. And I was very argumentative, and I still like to debate, but I think one of the reasons I've become a better debater is because I'm much better at seeing the whole picture and being able to see it from someone else's view. And I would very much tell my younger self, if he would be open-minded enough to listen, to be a little bit more slow before I make judgments, and be more open-minded to understanding that your way is not always the right way.
Do you think you would have listened to yourself?
No. No, to be very truthful, I don't. I think I was too stuck in my own way. I was too arrogant, to be very candid with you. I think I was too arrogant. And I think one of the things that has made me less judgmental and less arrogant is like being very honest with the mistakes that I've made in my life. Like, none of us are perfect, and least of which myself. Like, I've made many. I'm open to seeing them. It's very easy to just, well, that's different, or I'm different. And I think when we really look at ourselves and we can be honest with the things that we're doing or not doing, the things that we're not doing to morally right, ethically right, or to really live up to our own highest expectations, when you can be honest with yourself and look at that, then you can start to be more accepting of other people. I'll give you an example. I would get so mad if I found out that someone lied to me. I'd get so mad. Really, I'd be like, how dare you lie to me? And then if I lied to someone else, I would justify it. It's like, first and foremost, everybody has lied and everybody lies in their life. It never feels good and it's never right to do. I remember getting to a point, and I was having a conversation with Gary about this a couple of years ago, where like, I would get so upset if someone lied to me, but what about the times I lied to them? And you see this, like, why get so mad? Why have this like rage when someone lies to you, when you're no better? You do the same stuff. We all do. And so really understanding, we all make mistakes, and you can't get upset at others when you're also making mistakes. You really have to be much more introspective and honest with yourself in order to be more open-minded.
I feel that like sometimes we transform our lies into different ways of lying and convince ourselves that we're not lying, but it's just another form of lying.
I completely agree.
Well, thank you so much for doing this, man.
Yeah, this was a blast, man. Honestly, I do a lot of podcasts. My girlfriend will tell you, she's in the other room. I do a lot of podcasts, and you are a tremendous host. I would love to get to know you better. If you ever get to the States, I'd love to grab coffee or something.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that a lot.
Absolutely, man. Of course. Stay well. And again, if I can help with anything, please tell me.
Awesome. Have a good one, man.
You too.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in. This podcast was amazing. I really appreciated the kind words that Jordan gave me. And by the end, it was really nice to hear from him. If you like the podcast today, I'd invite you guys to go give a 5-star rating on the Smith Vibes on iTunes, Spotify, all that good stuff. And once again, when you guys leave a comment, it's just amazing just to see what you guys like about these podcasts and everything. So feel free to reach out if you have any questions for me or Jordan. I'll make sure to send him his way, and maybe he could get back to me, and I could share it somehow in the best way possible. So leave a comment, share it to your friends, and have a great one.